Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Army Chief of Staff has ordered a total aviation stand down after the collision of two Apache helicopters in Alaska. Three soldiers died in yesterday's crash after a routine training mission. A fourth was injured and is stable. CBS's David Martin at the Pentagon says the Army is conducting a review of its flight program.
In previous trends, when they have ordered these safety reviews, that has been one of the key findings. The pilots just get overloaded with collateral duties and are unable to focus on their primary duty of flying safely.
Severe storms are threatening parts of the southeast tonight through this weekend. Forecasters say large hail, strong winds, and even tornadoes are possible for the region. Texas is most at risk. The Weather Channel meteorologist Jackie Jarrett.
The storm system that's producing all the bad weather across Texas right now is going to be the system to watch through the rest of the weekend. This will continue to bring a threat of damaging winds, large hail, and even a few tornadoes into early tomorrow morning. Storms then work their way into the Gulf of Mexico, work their way back northward into the panhandle of Florida.
Russian airstrikes bombarded cities across Ukraine in the largest attack in more than a month. At least 25 people have been killed and dozens more injured. CBS's Charlie Daggett reports from Dnipro.
Drone footage revealed whole tower blocks torn away in the blast. Sergei lost everything except his life. I have no place to live, he said. My neighbors are gone. No one is left.
And gas prices are dropping, and oil industry analyst Tom Kloza expects it to continue for a while.
We're not going to get to that $4 number or anything close to the numbers we saw last year. Somewhere in the next 40 days, a lot of people will be able to say they're paying $1 to $1.50 less than they did in 2022.
AAA says the average national price of a gallon of regular unleaded is $3.62. A year ago, it was $4.14. There's a report that Jane Roberts, the wife of U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, was paid millions of dollars in recruiting commissions by some top law firms between 2007 and 2014. Details from CBS's Christopher Cruz.
A federal whistleblower complaint filed by one of Jane Roberts' former colleagues says she was paid $10.3 million for placing lawyers at the firms. Lawyers for at least one of those firms reportedly argued a case before the Supreme Court after the firm paid Mrs. Roberts hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Insider.com says the complaint is now in the hands of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. An Andy Warhol portrait of O.J. Simpson goes back to the auction block in New York on May 16th. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A former Wisconsin prosecutor is found guilty of making sex tapes with women without their knowing. One-time Burnett County Assistant DA Daniel Steffen is convicted on three charges. One of the victims was a woman he was prosecuting at the time. Steffen could go to prison for 10 years. Communities around Wisconsin could see their shared revenue go up by 10%. That's under a new plan unveiled by Republican lawmakers. Emily McFarland is the mayor of Watertown. She says they could use the boost.
One that I will never forget is the year that we considered shutting off every other streetlight in the city of Watertown to save $250,000.
There'll be more details next week. In sports, Iowa linebacker Lucas Van Ness is the Packers' first pick in the NFL draft. The Brewers host the Angels tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Embroidery Professionals Plus, how may I help you?
Yeah, I'm needing to get some patches made for a club I'm in. Is that something you guys do?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure how to get started.
Well, I'm happy to walk you through the process. Custom patches could be made in any size or shape and can be embroidered or printed. To get started, email your design.
Embroidery Professionals Plus has custom apparel specialists ready to work with your club, too. Two Wisconsin locations in Deerfield and Eden. Embroidery Professionals Plus, apparel you love, service you crave. Oh, yeah, and home of the Wisconsin tailgater hoodie.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mob Craft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mob Craft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mob Craft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. The Shaw, 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUK Radio.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So recently we had AFSCME President Lee Saunders on the program to talk about the sanitation strike, the 1968 sanitation strike in Memphis, and the importance of workers realizing their power and organizing. And look, they're throughout every generation, you know, and I've said this numerous times, every generation has to rediscover what solidarity means to them, find its voice, find its power. And I hope we're living through one of those moments right now that historians are going to look back on and go, hey, you know, this was important. You know, finding workers finding their power. The question is what lies ahead? And before we can live in the future, we got to look to the past. And that's always helpful. And here to talk about his hot off the presses new book, Under the Iron Heel, The Wobblies and the Capitalist War on Radical Workers. I've asked Ahmad White to come talk with us. He's a professor of law at the University of Colorado Boulder. Professor, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So why did we write this book? This is not something that a lot of people think back to, the Wobblies, the IWW, the industrial workers of the world. Not a topic a lot of people get into. What made you write the book?
Oh, there are a number of reasons. I had a longstanding interest in the IWW going back about, 20 years or so. I would say the most outstanding reason I wrote the book was, as one of my close colleagues put it, to pay tribute to these people and to what they tried to accomplish and to what they endured and to give some testament to their experiences, which I think are well worth being remembered.
Yeah, the short memory that I have of the IWW is the slogan, an injury to one being an injury to all, and the idea of one big union that everyone's in, skilled workers, unskilled workers, white, black, male, female, all of that. And also the 1912 Bread and Roses strike, the textile strike up in Lawrence, Massachusetts, in that area. Those are the two things that pop out. Does that seem about right?
Yeah, that's right. You remember some of the most essential things about this extremely important organization in American history, the Wobblies, as they were universally called, the members of the IWW. Founded their union for an explicitly revolutionary purpose in the summer of 1905. And for about 20 years thereafter, they captivated much of the nation, the working class. Many people embraced them. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people supported the union. Hundreds of thousands joined it. And on the other side of that, many people in the ruling class came to despise this organization, and they set out to destroy it.
Yeah, and look, you had the kind of inequality that I would argue we're suffering through today. Jobs obviously were much more difficult back then. The laws hadn't been in place. People were working, 12 sun up to sundown schedules, 6-7 days a week, brutal conditions. A much more brutal era. But people saying enough is enough already. And I see us in kind of the same same kind of environment now where workers have been exploited for far too long. And a lot of people are raising their head going, enough is enough.
That's right. That's one of the many lessons of this story about the IWW and what happened to it 100 years ago is a lesson about determination, about courage and resolve, and the importance of that in challenging the kinds of working conditions that workers all over the world have always faced. Yes, things were very bad at the time the IWW was formed. That's one reason the union was established. And you're right, they're not as bad today, but there's still tremendous inequality in this country. There's still tremendous exploitation, tremendous alienation, insecurity, things like that. And what the Wobblies tried to do and what they endured are important lessons for workers and their supporters today.
Now you saw a lot of organizing coming together, but you also back then you had a lot more, you know, a lot of capital pushback. There were a lot of beatings, a lot of violence, and a lot of using the state as you know, corporate militias, corporate police, if you will, to beat down some of these organizing drives. Any lessons that we should be learning today as we see some of the legislation, some of the laws maybe changing in one way or another? Anything that you see similar between the eras?
I think one of the most important lessons to learn from the IWW is actually a skepticism about the state. When the union was formed, its founders forecast that in short order they would find themselves under the Iron Heel, the topic, the Iron Heel, being the title of a very famous, at the time, very famous, very popular novel by Jack London.
Right.
The union's members, Jack London himself, forecast that these people who set out to topple capitalism, to create a workers' commonwealth, would be repressed. And at the center of that campaign of repression would be the state. And so the IWW, from the outset, was very, very, very skeptical about the state. And that was one thing that separated them from other major currents of leftism and labor organizing in the early 20th century, the mainstream of the Socialist Party, much of the established labor union movement, trade union movement, as well as the communist movement when that emerged in 1919. The IWW had a very different view of the state. And I think that's something worth thinking about nowadays. Even if you don't go as far as the IWW did,
right,
in rejecting the state in its entirety as a means of reforming the condition of labor or bringing about revolution, I don't think you have to go that far. You might want to, but I don't think you have to go that far to take from this union an important lesson in who controls the state and what the state is liable to do to people who trample on or attempt to compromise the interest of powerful people.
And it's not hard to understand why they thought that way. I mean, if you looked at what happened to the Knights of Labor, you know, just a few years before, you know, they were basically crushed by the state.
That's right. That's right. And it's not a coincidence that some of the founding members of the IWW had experience in the Knights of Labor. Others were veterans of the Western Federation of Miners, an organization of so-called hard rock miners in the western reaches of the United States that had fought labor wars all over the West. So it's not a coincidence that the primary leader of the IWW in its first 20 years of existence or so was a familiar person to some people, William Big Bill Hayward, who was an official in the Western Federation of Miners. When he called to order the convention in Chicago, summer of 1905, that established the industrial workers of the world.
No, I mean, for me, you know, as someone who has a libertarian bent, and I think this is something that, you know, a lot of my, you know, whatever side of the aisle you're on politically, the libertarian streak in us says, you know, I don't want the state, you know, dictating how we have to negotiate. I've always been of the mindset that we win things at the bargaining table. We fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and we enforce them ourselves, and we hold on to those because those things that we fight for, we're not so easy to give up on. And I think that's really been the lesson of the last 50, 60 years, is all those fights, you know, Knights of Labor, IWW, you know, CIO forward, those things have been easy to give up because there have been a couple of generations who have been detached from it and didn't have to fight for it, which is why you hear, well, you know, those unions are something we needed 100 years ago, when the reality is workers are getting cheated today.
Well, that's right. And again, another lesson related to some things we've talked about that can be drawn from the IWW's experience and its counsel to workers is how unreliable these legal reforms mediated by the state, administered by the state, can be. I think in some ways the whole history of the modern labor movement in the United States is a confirmation of that. That how many workers now and workers' allies have come to understand that by bitter experience, the frustrations of dealing with the National Labor Relations Act and the way, yes, it gives workers or protects workers' rights to form unions, to engage in strikes and all of that, but it also limits all of those things.
It's an excellent point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Ahmed White. He's a professor of law at the University of Colorado Boulder, also the author of Under the Iron Heel, The Wobblies and the Capitalist War on Radical Workers. You know, this is one of these moments where you go, you look at just what you brought up, the National Labor Relations Act, I believe, was a peace treaty to get, you know, these kind of activist workers out of the streets and back into the negotiating table, which I'm not opposed to. But like you said, things drifted away. And I find it interesting that, you know, the founding of the IWW is the same year of the, you know, the New York Bake Shop Act. That began moving us, you know, eventually toward the Lochner era, where we couldn't use those laws anymore. So for me, there's some parallel there, or do you think I'm just reaching for something here? Because it seems there seems something there to me.
No, there's something very important there, and it's to do with the interesting role, the tragic role that progressivism played in the demise of the IWW and the repression of it. And it's one of the themes in the book that. Even though there were some progressives who supported the IWW, at least supported its right to exist and helped defend its members against the vicious repression that they faced, progressives were also at the center of this campaign to destroy the IWW, at the same time that they were leading an effort that I think ultimately culminated with the National Labor Relations Act and the New Deal period to reform the world of work. To institute legal reforms that would make the workplace essentially better in some ways without ever challenging the basic structures of power and control in American society and in the American workplace. So the Wobblies' history and the history of the destruction of the union in the 19-teens and 1920s is entwined with the rise of progressivism and the rise of reformism.
An interesting book. I hope folks will take a look at it. Under the Iron Heel, The Wobblies and the Capitalist War on Radical Workers. We'll get links out on social media how you can pick that up. Powell's Books, most certainly a place you can go. You can also go to ahmedwhite.org. We'll get links out on that as well. So last line of questioning I've got for you. After writing this book, what are you hoping people take from it? When working people read this, what's the message that you want them to take away from?
You know, I suppose the most important thing that one can take from it is a sense of pride. If you are a worker, if you're part of the labor movement, if you're a person of the left, this to me was a tremendous story of resolution, of determination and courage, of audacity, and of workers standing up for themselves. And I think especially if one is a worker or a unionist, leftist, there is something here worth reading about and an opportunity to see in what happened to these people 100 years ago, a broader affirmation of unions, of workers, of the central aims of the American left.
Or just of working people wanting a better future for themselves and their families. For me, it's that story of striving to have better, families, better communities, better opportunities. All of that seems to play into this for me. And, in reading through some of it, I identify with a good bit of what they were moving forward to. And I hope folks will take a look at it and maybe some of the ideas will spring forward and help us move forward as well.
I hope so.
Ahmed White, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much. The book, Under the Iron Heel, The Wobblies and the Capitalists, War on Radical Workers. Again, we'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Ahmed, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Going to take a quick break. Want to get your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. Stick around. Listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to TheRickSmithShow.com.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I like these books talking about labor's past, because I think the more we learn from the struggles of the past, the easier the future will be. And it drives me crazy when people go, no, we don't need those stinking unions. You know, that was something we needed 100 years ago. Yeah, I needed them 100 years ago. Absolutely right. You need them again. It seems simple to me, which is why it's interesting. I got an email from Brenda, listening on WIOO 97.9 in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, asked quite pointedly, why would anyone join a union? And this is what blows my mind. I don't know why anyone would ask that question. I mean, the simple answers are, well, you know, collective bargaining agreements that get you better wages, hours, conditions, you know, higher salaries, better benefits, that kind of stuff. Job security, the end of at-will employment. You have to be fired for cause. There has to be a reason for you to lose your job. Seniority rights, that kind of stuff. But, you know, also, you know, safer working conditions. But for me, it's that empowerment, that sense that you have a say in the destination of your life, that you can, that your voice matters. But I appreciate the email, Brenda, and I don't understand why you would ask the question, but I'm glad you did. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
I'm insane.
Okay.
So, you know, nothing new about that. You were saying at the beginning of the show, talking about Ted Cruz and his pushing lies and propaganda about abortion. And the thing that really gets me is, these are supposed to be, and you'll notice I said supposed, to be educated people. And they are fulfilling being public servants. And they're also telling us over and over about how they love Jesus, and, you know, it's all about Christianity and those Ten Commandments. And if I recall correctly, one of them is about you're not supposed to lie. But yet... they seem to think nothing about lying, because we all know that we don't do abortions after a child is born, because that wouldn't be an abortion. That would be murder.
Yeah, but again, they understand. Ted Cruz knows. He knows what the law is. Ted Cruz knows exactly what he's doing. Just, you know, as I've said before, you know, is it worse that someone knows that they're lying to you or actually truly believes it? I think Ted Cruz is one of the worst people on the planet because I know he knows better. But he does it because this is about, you know, as you said, you know, the Ten Commandments. There's a couple of them he's breaking there. You know, the bearing false witness and the idolatry, you know, the worshiping of money, because this really is about wealth and power. This is about campaign cash. This is about keeping him in the power position. He doesn't believe this stuff, but it's good rhetoric to inflame the poorly educated.
Well, it is. And, you know, it really bothers me that and ignorance abounds. All these people going, well, you know, the heartbeat bill, 6 weeks. Well, riddle me this. How can you have a heartbeat when a heart in a fetus does not form until around the fifth month? So, you know, it just shows how uneducated, apparently, the entire Republican Party is. But there's nothing new about that. They're right on my list along with West Virginia. But, you know, we'll not go there. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thank you, Alice. I appreciate it. No, and look, you know, this again is my problem of the moment that we're in. None of this is about solutions. Understand this. It's not about solutions. It's not about fixing things. It's not about moving forward. It's about continuing the fight and the struggle to keep us apart so that they can continue to move what their real agenda is. And the real agenda, and this isn't conspiratorial, it just is. It's more for the rich and powerful, more money, more wealth, more power, more all of that, and less for you and me. And the thing that they dance in front of us every chance they get to keep us distracted from the fact that enormous amounts of wealth have been stolen from the working class of this country is this stupid stuff. You know, I had someone ask me, you know, why I care. I go, I don't. I mean, this is the problem. I really don't care about these issues. Honestly, I mean, you know, the same-sex marriage doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter, affect my life at all. But someday I may know somebody, and that matters. I grew up in a time, and I guess this just means being Gen X. I grew up in a time where, you know, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. You minded your own business. As long as it doesn't cost me anything. You know, I had someone say, well, will you use pronouns? I go, no, I'm not going to put pronouns in my signature. If you can't tell I'm a man, well, that's on you. But if someone tells me, hey, I go by this pronoun, I'm going to try and use them use whatever pronoun they want, whatever name they want, because it's respectful. It's being decent. And the sad reality is that whole thing that our parents taught us, or at least my mother taught me, was to be decent, to be respectful. You know, that golden rule, treat others as you'd want them to treat you, or, you know, the silver one, treat them as poorly as you would want them to treat you as poorly. But we've got a whole political class right now hell-bent on, again, keeping us enraged at each other on any topic. On any topic, it's life or death. And with social media, the trolling is, most of it is just, I don't think people who actually understand or care about the issue, it's just about making someone else as miserable as they are. This is why I believe in face-to-face conversations. You know, I get vile stuff from people via email, via social media, vile stuff. Stuff I know if I took to their mother and said, do you know your child wrote this? The mother would wash their mouth out with soap. At least my mother would have. But we're not that society anymore. And it's because we've got bad leaders. It's hard to believe that someone like Sheldon Whitehouse, a good, decent man, is in the same institution as Ted Cruz. Hard for me to believe. And the reality is, I look at Cruz, Ivy League educated, brilliant guy. I guess he's argued before the Supreme Court. He's at the top of the heap, you know, credential wise. Spreading lies and misinformation for political gain. He's a huckster. He's in the same world as someone like Trump. And until we, you, me, us, put down this nonsense, we're going to continue to get ripped off. And nothing for us gets done. Yeah, issue after issue. There are solutions. there are solutions, and I believe we can find them. The problem is the other side, they don't want solutions. They want division. They want destruction. They want anger. They want animosity. They want us to keep the red hats and the blue hats on.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The U.S. Army grounds aviation units for training after deadly helicopter crashes in Alaska and Kentucky, killing 12 in the past month, three soldiers yesterday. CBS's David Martin.
Across the entire Army, they're going to have to stand down and review all of their safety procedures.
Portions of Central and East Texas are seeing severe weather. Jeremiah Silsby owns a restaurant in Crockett.
It felt like there was a hurricane happening. And when I would look out the window, the trees looked like rubber bands. Like there was no stiffness to them at all.
The Florida Panhandle is in the path of the storms this weekend. The average national price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas is $3.62. And oil industry analyst Tom Kloza expects prices to keep dropping because crude oil prices are low.
We've got crude oil numbers that are kind of muddling around in the 70s. And a year ago, they were above $100 a barrel.
Kloza says what could drive prices back up, hurricanes along the Gulf Coast this summer. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matt-Nair. Here's what you need to know. A bill allowing advanced practice nurses to work independently is before the state legislature. The Wisconsin Nursing Association says with doctor shortages in some parts of Wisconsin, advanced practice nurses can help provide access to quality health care. Governor Evers' budget proposal includes some restrictions, including requiring advanced practice nurses to work with doctors two more years before becoming independent. Concerns over children's use of the new Snapchat My AI chatbot, which can hold a human-like conversation that can't be deleted. My AI uses ChatGPT to respond within seconds, but the information isn't always accurate. Privacy is also a concern because while the chats disappear after one day, Snapchat keeps the data. Officials say talk to your kids so they understand how to use it safely. I'm Jane Matt-Nair. This is Civic Media News.
Embroidery Professionals Plus, how may I help you?
Hi, I'm looking to get my business logo put on some things. Is that something that you do?
Absolutely. Do you have items in hand or do you need to order apparel?
Actually, both.
Were you interested in having your logo embroidered or printed?
Actually, both.
Well, you called the right place. To get started,
Embroidery Professionals Plus has custom apparel specialists ready to work with your business, too. Two Wisconsin locations in Deerfield and in Eden. Embroidery Professionals Plus, apparel you love, service you crave. Oh, yeah, and home of the Wisconsin Tailgater hoodie.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mob Craft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mob Craft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mob Craft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to therickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Evidently, Fox News, this is getting better and better every day with this Tucker Carlson thing. The blue check mark mafia on Twitter, they're all on board. Wherever Tucker goes next, they're going to be there. In fact, they were sharing a picture of him laughing, playing golf. But I loved the Rolling Stone report that said, evidently Fox News executives have a dossier. There's a dossier. Evidently, it's got a bunch of dirt on Tucker Carlson that he'll stay in line. He's not going to do anything stupid. They've got the dirt. Wow. I mean, you couldn't write this stuff, to be honest. I mean, Netflix wouldn't pick this show up. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day from India, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Namaste, Rick. How are you?
I am great. How are things in India?
Pretty good. They like us, and it's a world's largest democracy. It will exceed the population of China, I think, within a year or two. So things are pretty good. Let's see. The American hotel chains that are $220 a night are $53 a night here. How about that?
Wow.
Gas is high, but rest of the products have stayed relatively low, but that's because the buying power. I mean, you know, if you raise the prices too much, they're simply not going to sell here. People aren't going to buy them.
Right. So, yeah. Now, I know you like going there. I know that's your
getaway.
Mental health space. Let's use that.
It is. It's pretty peaceful over here. I went to Northern India with Ellen Ratner. Of course, who got me started on India, right?
Yeah.
Ellen Ratner, our friend Ellen.
Yeah, I miss
Ellen. That's how 12 years ago.
Yeah. So any thoughts on the insanity that's going on here as Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans passed their, the Limit, Save, and Grow Act, as I've been saying, otherwise known as the Let's Shoot the Hostages Act. Any thoughts going on there of how insane we are?
Well, I mean, it's more insane what Fox News is happening for the spicy side of news with Fox, but this is creating its own problems. Here's a couple of observations I like to make on this. One, from the very start, what's the kind of main headline on this beyond what it does or beyond where it's going to go? Here's the main headline. I find this, if I were the speaker, I would find this troublesome, to say the least. Four Republicans went against it. He only had one vote to spare. It was 217 to 215. You know, here's sort of the headlines is that, you know, McCarthy beats his caucus. They don't say that, but he defeats his caucus. He wins. That in itself,
yeah,
to make the observation that, wow, McCarthy, he's a leader because he just got his own caucus to support the debt ceiling bill. In itself, what does that tell you, Rick? You're one of the best retail political people I know. Tells you he's got a problem.
Yeah. No, like I said at the beginning, and I said, you know, if this bill had any chance of passing, and it doesn't, I say maybe 50 people vote for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because so it's that bad. When you're talking about a 22% cut to the VA, when you're talking about a 22% cut to the Social Security Administration, when you're talking these kind of massive draconian cuts, that's going to hurt your constituents, and they know that.
Right. So this was a, and for some people, by the way, this is a, in the Republican caucus, because, you know, I was in that caucus, this is going to serve as a safety net for them, believe it or not. You know, some people, Marjorie Taylor, you know, Green, Marjorie Taylor, three names, it's going to serve as a safety cushion for them, because they're going to say, hey, I voted, you know, I voted to do the right thing. Can't help what the rest of the system does.
Yeah.
So for some of them, it'll be that. For others, this is going to be a vote that, of course, will be used against them. Here's the number one thing about this piece of legislation, and it's not inherently what's in it as much as it should never exist. You raise debt ceilings. I did it multiple times when Bush was president. We did it when Clinton was president. You raise or you don't raise debt ceilings. You don't do a budget in a debt ceiling bill. Why? This is such 101 politics, 101 government, 101 sociology. They are voting on what has already happened.
I know.
They're codifying what already went down last year.
And then taking on the arrows of what I argue a budget being a moral document and a document of priorities by sticking it to veterans and seniors.
Right. Yes, they did. So, the substance in itself is not good with anything they've done with seniors or veterans, but also to attempt to do a budget in a debt ceiling bill is just, it's politically bizarre. Why do you want to put your members on a mark here? Because some of the members that voted for this, now the four that didn't, of course, Matt Gaetz of Florida didn't vote for it because it didn't make people work 15 hours a day for $2 an hour, you know, for food stamps. So yeah, that's Matt Gaetz's thinking. But why would you want to put your members on the line? Why would you want to vote for this when it's not even a budget process? You argue all these things out in the 11 or 13 appropriation bills, depends how they craft them. You argue all of these things out, Rick, as you know, the old way we used to do it, line by line, budget item by budget item, and an amendment process. This wasn't an amendment process on where you stood on veterans. You know, this was just a cut.
Yeah.
So the whole thing's bizarre. And then on top of it, to have the story of how, you know, the speaker was finally able to, you know, maneuver, push, threaten, wrangle, whatever you want to call, his own caucus to barely survive by one vote.
Yeah, but I keep coming back to the main point. He got them to vote for something that's never going to become law. It's never going to pass. The president said he's going to veto it, and I don't think it gets through the Senate, even if it does.
Right. This was a pre-budget statement to satisfy a lot of members of the Freedom Caucus. That's what this was, a pre-budget statement, because it should never have happened this way. So he was satisfying them. But the whole thing is going wrong from the substance of the bill, the cuts that it incurred without debate for the veterans and seniors, without debate. And people say, well, the bill is debated. No. These are complicated line items dealing with veterans and seniors and domestic spending and defense and everything else under the sun. And you don't do it in a bill that just says, oh, here's our numbers, here we go. It's not the way it's done in the debt ceiling bills.
Yeah, so, but you used
and
word
this also,
there.
By the way, gives no leverage to them with the president.
Yeah, none. I mean, there's nothing there.
None.
But you used the word complicated, which is a complicated word that they don't understand. I mean, I have, you know, friends who are like, governing is easy. You know, being a legislator is easy. No, it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of compromise if you do it right. What we're seeing is it being done wrong.
Correct. The whole process, you're right, Rick, is done wrong. When we did these budgets years back, we dug in, we, Republicans and Democrats, dug in, I mean, line item by line item. You know, how was this working in health and human services? How did this work in veterans? It allowed you actually to do some things like saying, hey, you know, the VA bureaucratic system's not working fast enough. Let's put an amendment in there for them to speed up the process for veterans approval. You can do all those things if you do it in the right format, in the right way, which is the budget process.
Yeah, that takes too
long.
So
they have short-circuited all of that.
That takes too long. It's easy just to have a performative bill that we ram through so that we can go back to our podcast circuit and our F channel and say, we tried, but they stopped us.
Right. So this is a non-starter. Here we go. Where do we end up? Is this going to be high noon? And here's the other point. How do you now, as Republican caucus, how do you yield to do something, you know, to avert the shutdown? Or you let the shutdown occur, and then it's sort of like Iraq. What was our exit plan? Oops, we didn't have one, you know? And that's what's going to happen with the Republicans. If you don't have an exit plan, you know, because they know this is not going to make it. They know it has no hope. So what's the exit plan? I don't know. Is it the exit plan punt when we get there?
No, the exit plan is blame Biden. That's always the plan. In a little over a month and a half, or I guess not even a month and a half yet, there's a very real, you know, consequence at the end of this road. One that we've never done before. One, at least, have we defaulted before?
Well, we shut down the government, which is different than the default.
Yeah, no, we shut
down.
As,
right.
But, we've never actually pushed the button and, right, and gone nuclear right option.
Right. And that's part of the problem, because a lot of people that are watching this that, you know, aren't up to speed on what D.C. is really doing will view this as, when this happens, or if it happens, or when, they'll view it as a, quote, shutdown. We've shut down before. You know, I was part of that years back, and it's happened a couple times, but the default is completely different. And then that takes our rating also. I'll tell you who would be most happy if we defaulted. It's China.
Yeah.
They want their currency to be the one that rules, not the dollar. They would love it if we would default. It would play right into them trying to take over the currency. So, yes, this would be historic. And as they near towards it, again, if they don't have an exit plan, in normal cases, when I would do news over the last 12 years, right, and I would say, oh, here we go. You know, here's the hype. We're to the edge of the diving board. You know, do we shut down? Do we not shut down?
The bomb's ticking.
Right, here we go. Oh, the brave Senate and the brave House. And then they do a continuing resolution, and you know, and we all move on, and we all knew the drama was there. This time is different. You're right, this time it might be the real deal.
That's why I keep saying they want to shoot the hostage, just because it's never been done before. They want the chaos. And I've got people going, you know, my 401k was so much better under Trump. If Republicans get their way right now, your 401k is going to look a lot worse.
There's the other thing. In the height of, you know, our times now, and with, you know, continued gasoline increases, thank you, Saudi Arabia, and with the inflation, you know, the job market back and forth, good, a little mild. I mean, with all these factors going on, this is surely not the time to even tempt this.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, sharing some thoughts from India. From India, and thank you for calling in and sharing some thoughts.
Sure.
I want to get your thoughts before you go on what's going on in Florida with DeSantis and Disney. This just seems crazy on really kind of a bizarre level. You've got DeSantis, who's got some war on woke, whatever that is. I guess, you know, even his people say, you know, being decent. This war on decency, and taking it to Disney. Now Disney's filing a lawsuit against them. Any thoughts on how crazy this is?
Yeah, I haven't looked into, you know, all the details of the history of this relationship. When I say this relationship, Florida and Disney, friends of mine have pointed out you really ought to look into some of the past, you know, ability of Disney to become its own zoning authority. And there's all these intricacies. I guess it's sort of like comparable if you're in Ohio and you're a lawmaker and you're dealing with Honda, right?
Right.
You know, which came to Ohio, and it's a big deal in Ohio. This one, I mean, Walt Disney and Florida are so intertwined, you know, and they've got this lawsuit, you're right. And they are alleging the Republican governor has waged a relentless campaign to weaponize, this is interesting, Disney's using this weaponized government power to use it over the company's head. And so this suit, I think, what this suit does, Rick, is it takes the whole behind the scenes and front scenes of the DeSantis Disney feud, and it's taking it and it's putting it on a high speed train, you know, and it's throwing it right out front, because the lawsuit was filed the same day that the DeSantis backed board moved to undo a development deal that it says Disney struck to show how powerful it is. So the board was going to undo that deal. So I think that this escalates everything that's been going on between DeSantis and Disney, and it throws it also right out front. Now, the question I ask in my mind is, Disney, you know, do they have clean hands, like Judge Judy says, you know, to do these suits? Why would a corporation like Disney throw this out right in front of the public, unless, if you look at this, it probably looks better than he does if it comes public, right?
Yeah, I'm, and I got to think the laws on Disney's side. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, because, you know, there's a part of me that goes, you know, isn't this kind of singling out one entity? And I know there's some, you know, there's some language in our Constitution about singling, in enforcing laws against, you know, individuals. Or I don't know. There seems to be, you know, some gray area here that could be interesting to watch how it gets fought out.
True, and it's been back and forth over the years before DeSantis with Disney, and how powerful should it be? How much should it do on its own, the zoning? How much Florida has to be involved with? And now, you know, the match that lit this was the fact that this DeSantis-backed board said to Disney, no, you can't do that deal. But yeah, the fight really began last year when Disney came out against the Florida bill, which is it's been dubbed Don't Say Gay bill, and they came out against it, and that absolutely, you know, DeSantis went wild with that and went after Disney for speaking against the bill.
You know, for me, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Republicans believe corporations are people. And as I understand, 14th Amendment, you know, gives you the, you know, this equal protection clause that, you know, they can't go after you and enforce. There's an interesting legal argument that I hope Disney pursues.
Well, they are, because the panel that DeSantis, you know, created and, you know, put the people on board, because this was the last straw for Disney. Okay, the panel unanimously voted to declare Disney void and unenforceable for their development deal. Now, that development deal was approved before DeSantis replaced the Disney-approved board with his people.
Right.
So here you have this is striking. Here you have a board that's created to kind of have this oversight of Disney. Disney brings a proposal, a deal. The board says yes. DeSantis replaces board members, and the board then says what? No. And it was investing $17 billion over the next decade. $17 billion. Here's the stats, Rick. Over the next decade, this deal, yielding 13,000 new jobs, right, on top of its more than 75 current cast members, you know, these were permanent jobs. And so what the deal that was approved did then was to be disapproved. I don't see how Disney loses.
Well, maybe the Fox settlement won't be.
It might be small.
Yeah, well, we will see. Bob, I appreciate the time as always. Enjoy your time in India. I appreciate you.
Okay.
You coming around. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. You know, seriously, this is going to be at least entertaining. And you know, maybe it's one of the things that, wouldn't it be ironic if Disney is what brought DeSantis down? No, wait a minute. Not DeSantis brought himself down. Never mind. I'm not going to give Disney that credit. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. In 1948, gold was discovered at John Souter's Mill in California. As word spread, fortune seekers from all across the United States and across the world flocked to California in what became known as the Gold Rush. This included thousands from China. Many of the Chinese miners planned to return home with the gold they mined. As the easily accessible gold became more and more scarce due to the rush, resentment grew against foreign miners. In 1850, California passed the Foreign Miners Tax, charging those who came from outside the United States $20 a month. On this day in labor history, the year was 1862. The California legislature passed an act to further limit Chinese miners. The official title was An Act to Protect Free White Labor Against Competition with Chinese Coolie Labor and to Discourage the Immigration of the Chinese into the state of California. The word coolie referred to unskilled laborers from China and the Indian subcontinent. It was also often used as a derogatory term for Chinese people. The act implemented new taxes and licensing requirements on Chinese miners. The steep taxes led many Chinese to leave mining. Nearly 12,000 Chinese workers found employment with the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad.
They performed extremely dangerous work, laying the track through the Rocky Mountains. Yet, when the railroad project was completed, the Chinese workers were excluded from the celebrations. They were also not allowed to ride on the trains that crossed the continent for the first time. Anti-Chinese racism continued to grow. 20 years after the passage of the California law, the federal government passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. This law prohibited the immigration of Chinese labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Well, here's a shocker. And you knew this was going to happen. The MAGA movement, wildly unpopular, evidently. Latest NBC News poll finds that the MAGA folks, least popular group. Evidently, just 24% of Americans in this poll had a positive view, while 45% have a negative view. Republicans, however, when you look at those numbers, and this is surprising, 52% of Republicans had a positive view of the MAGA folk. That's interesting, as well as 53% of the people who define themselves, stake the flag in the ground as conservative. On the Trump front, Trump is wildly disliked by swing voters. Evidently, Biden has a 39-point lead with swing voters, 54 to 15. Because, they may dislike Biden, but they really dislike Trump. And this is one of those things where you just go, I know Democrats want Trump to run for real, so that Biden can win, because we'll see. But it's interesting that Republicans want Trump even more now, which, great. Good for you. You keep pushing them. 63% in the most recent Marist poll say that they want Trump to have a second term, even with all of the stuff that's going on, even if he's guilty of the crimes. Yeah. My favorite quote of the day. Carrie Lake, the failed Arizona gubernatorial candidate, she said that Fox News is in bed with the left because they fired Tucker. How dare they? And speaking of Fox News, interesting little back and forth between Brian Kilmeade, who I can't stand, and Rona McDaniel, who I don't trust. Evidently, while being interviewed by Kilmeade, McDaniel said President Trump never shies away from a debate, even though Trump's kind of leaning towards no debates. And Kilmeade goes, yes, he does. He skipped ours in 2016. He did? Well, he skipped one. I love that back and forth. And finally, another neighbor. This time a 79-year-old guy angry with his neighbor for doing yard work. Yes, the guy had a leaf blower. He's out leaf blowing, and the 79-year-old guy goes out with a gun, shoots him in the head. The 59-year-old dead, 79-year-old being carted away. And this, again, is another one of those moments where, explain to me how guns make us safer. And you go, but Rick, this is an isolated incident. Seems to be happening a lot lately. Old white guys angry about stuff. I don't know. There seems to be some kind of a weird pattern going on. Back in the old days, I remember people pulling out guns and, it's kind of a threat thing. You should go away. You should stop. And but not really using them as often. Today, it seems like we're doing it a lot. It seems we're doing it a lot. And the question then is, what do you do with a 79-year-old guy? By the time he gets to trial, he's probably going to be dead anyway. What punishment is there? Now, this family is going to lose a husband, a father, a breadwinner. Chaos. And for what? For what? Another senseless killing. And what's interesting is, I had someone email me the other day and say, the most dangerous places in the country? One of the most dangerous places, Memphis, Tennessee. I didn't know that. Tacoma, Washington. Didn't know that. What about Chicago? No. What about New York? No. Those are actually fairly safe places. In fact, you know, red states are some of the most dangerous places in the country, they tell me. And they're the ones who have the guns. And again, I keep asking that question. When do we get to peak safety again? When do we get the neighbors not shooting each other? I know. Good guy with a gun. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got anything on your mind? Something I said got under your skin? Angry hate emails I answer first. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you'll find ours. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming.